This purports to be a book on lies and lying, but it does not treat of the lies of politicians, stockbrokers, newspaper men, authors, and others who lie for money. Neither does it touch on the untruths of scandal, mischief, or malice, but only on those lies which amuse, instruct, and elevate without harm. It is a record of lies told in a club known as the Sazerac Lying Club, whose objects, as its name implies, are lying. A chapter is devoted to the rise, progress, and history of this club, interspersed with these lies. The book contains a number of sketches of odd characters in Nevada and local narratives of life in Austin, written by the author and published from time to time in the columns of the Austin Reveille, of which paper the writer has for several years been editor, and which have been clipped from the files of that journal and made to do service in padding out this book to a sellable size. In the days of the father of this country, if we are to believe a little tale about an adventure in connection with a particular cherry tree, lying was looked upon as wrong. But that was before the time of the steam engine, the electric telegraph, daily newspapers, stocks and stockbrokers, and other modern improvements. Today, to lie, and lie well, is meritorious, and besides, there's money in it, which of itself is sufficient to make it commendable. Newspaper Editor, Fred D. Hart, Austin, Nevada, 1878.
The Night the Truth Walked into the Sazerac, a fictional story. By the time the third lie of the evening was poured, the Sazerac saloon had already grown 2 inches wider and one story taller. Silas Windmill Crow claimed responsibility for the expansion. He sat near the pot-bellied stove, hat tipped back, boots crossed, explaining how a similar enlargement once occurred in Carson City, when he described a trout so large it required its own county clerk. No one disputed him. In the Sazerac, walls were known to behave politely when addressed with sufficient confidence. Maud Kettering wiped the bar with a rag that had known better days and worse stories. She had been tending drinks for the Lying Club since its founding, and remembered every version of every lie ever told, though she never corrected anyone. Correction was the death of imagination, and imagination was the only honest industry left in Virginia City. The club was nearly at full strength, miners with silver dust still clinging to their cuffs, a newspaper editor who could lie in print and swear it was truth, and one local politician who attended only to ensure that no one exaggerated him smaller than he deserved. Each man waited his turn, nursing whiskey and ambition, eager to be crowned once again, or for the first time, the monumental liar of America. Silas had just concluded a stirring account of how he once outran his own shadow across the desert when the saloon door opened. The newcomer did not look like much of anything. He was thin, pale from indoor habits, and carried himself with the stiff caution of a man afraid to knock something over, possibly the world. He stood just inside the doorway as though waiting for permission to exist. Maud raised an eyebrow. The room grew curious. "I'm looking for the Sazerac Lying Club," the man said. "You found it," Silas replied, gesturing grandly with his glass. "Step lively, friend. Lies don't wait." The stranger nodded once and moved to the bar. "I'm Ephraim Pike," he said, "and I don't lie." The silence that followed was immediate and complete. Even the spittoon, which had been working up to a remark, thought better of it. Silas blinked. Someone coughed. Maud leaned forward. "You're in the wrong saloon," she said kindly. "No," Ephraim replied. "I'm exactly where I mean to be." Silas laughed, a sound like a windmill starting up in a storm. "Gentlemen," he said, "we appear to have acquired a curiosity. A man who claims to tell the truth." "I don't claim," Ephraim said. "I do." That did it. The editor slapped the table. The politician frowned. A miner whispered that this sort of talk led to trouble. Silas stood. "Very well, Mr. Pike. We are a sporting club. You are welcome to join us, on one condition." Ephraim inclined his head. "You compete," Silas said. "Same as the rest of us. We tell our stories, you tell yours. At the end, we'll see what the truth is worth." Ephraim considered this. "All right." The contest resumed, though with a sharper edge. One by one, the members spun their masterpieces, a claim of striking silver with a sneeze, a poker hand won using only a reflection, a mule so stubborn it outlived three owners out of spite. Each lie was greeted with applause, groans, and friendly disbelief. Then it was Ephraim's turn. He stood, cleared his throat, and said, "I once borrowed $5 and returned it 2 days late." The room waited. "That's it," he added. Someone laughed uncertainly. Someone else looked offended. "That's not a story," Silas said. "It happened," Ephraim replied. Maud poured him another drink out of sympathy. The next round was no better. Ephraim described losing his umbrella, misplacing his hat, and once being slightly incorrect about the time. His truths were small, unadorned, and deeply uncomfortable. They left no room to stand taller than oneself. The club grew restless. "Where's the imagination?" demanded the editor. "I don't use it for facts," Ephraim said. Silas leaned forward. "Let me explain something, son. Lies aren't meant to deceive. They're meant to improve." On the final round, Silas rose for his crowning effort. He spoke of a night much like this one, when the town's silver mysteriously vanished from the vaults and reappeared in the pockets of men who swore they had nothing to do with it. He told it as a grand adventure, horses leaping rooftops, safes opening themselves out of admiration, officials so honest they accidentally accepted bribes without noticing. The room roared with laughter. But as Silas went on, the laughter thinned. Names sounded familiar. Details aligned too neatly. What had begun as exaggeration drifted dangerously close to recollection. The politician shifted. The editor stopped smiling. Silas finished with a flourish. "And that, gentlemen, is how I saved the town without anyone realizing it." The room was quiet again, but not in the same way as before. Ephraim stood. "That didn't happen like that," he said. Silas smiled. "Of course not."
"It happened worse," Ephraim said. "And everyone here knows it."
The club stared at him. Silas studied Ephraim for a long moment, then laughed, softly this time. "Well," he said, raising his glass, "that settles it. Mr. Pike, you lose." The club cheered, relieved. Maud rang the bell.
"All in favor of naming Silas Crowe Monumental Liar of America for the 7th time?"
The vote was unanimous. Ephraim finished his drink, nodded politely, and headed for the door. As he reached it, Maud called after him.
"You'll come back?"
Ephraim paused. "No," he said. "But you might." The door closed behind him. The saloon seemed to shrink a little. Silas sat down, suddenly tired.
"Well," he said, "that was unpleasant."
Maud poured another round.
"Truth has that effect." ever on silver stories
and the careful agreement that some things were better said crooked. And inside the Sazerac, the lies grew larger, if only to keep the truth from coming back.